Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about Episode 6, reading from the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy on Gottlieb Leibniz, who harked out of Hanover for many years as a librarian, a religious philosopher who used the religious methodology developed from Aristotle of scholasticism, and really was a giant in the start of the Enlightenment. And in a certain sense, he came across a lot of important concepts, the very starts of set theory, the start of calculus, the start of binary numbers. We see none of this in this writing. He had a theory of a sort of structural theory, a structure of substances of humans and animals, and of a theory of knowledge to go across it, epistemology. Now we're going up to the last writing, section 7 here, called Philosophical Theology. Like most of his great contemporaries, Descartes, Spinoza, Malebranche, Leibniz developed a number of arguments for the existence of God. Two of these are presented in a condensed version of monadology. So monad is this thing from Plato, this circle with a dot in it, and a monad is basically the essence of a thought and a thing all bound up together. As a priori and a postori arguments, ontological and cosmological arguments to borrow Kant's terminology. So ontological means that from a blank sheet can you actually work out God, and cosmology is from looking at the universe. I really must admit that's missed me on the Kant. But there are long histories in Leibniz thought, yet, unlike Descartes and Spinoza at least, Leibniz also expended great efforts in explaining and justifying God's justice and benevolence in the world. In other words, Leibniz was keen to answer the problem of evil. His work on the subject led to the thesis so roundly mocked by Voltaire's Kennedy, that we live in the best of all possible worlds. And that's actually what he actually does. He believes that God is perfect. This is the best world that God could possibly get. The ontological argument to the existence of God, the ontological argument, so that's 7.1.1. Leibniz made an important contribution to the history of ontological arguments. His reflection on this forms the argument. Let's go back to the 1670s, and we know that he shared his thoughts on the matter with Spinoza when Leibniz visited him on the way to Hanover. Okay. According to Leibniz, the argument that Descartes gives implicitly in the fifth meditation and explicitly in the set of replies is faulty. Descartes had argued that God is a being having all perfections, existence is a perfection, therefore God exists. But Leibniz thinks one needs to show that it is possible for such a being to exist, that is, it is possible for all perfections to coexist in one being. If it is so, then only then can an ens perfectism be said to exist. In his short essay, quote, that a most... perfect being exists, and here's the Latin, quod ens perfecticism existis. In 1676, Leibniz argues just this. He defines a, quote, a perfection, quote, as a, quote, sorry, simple quantity which is positive and absolute, or which expresses without any limits whatever it does express. And with that definition in hand, Leibniz is then able to claim that there are no inconsistencies among perfections, since a perfection is being simple positive, is unanalyzable and incapable of enclosed by limits. That is, if A and B are perfections, then the proposition that A and B are incomparable cannot be demonstrated because A and B are simples, nor can a proposition be known per se. Therefore, it is possible that any and all perfections are in fact compatible, and therefore Leibniz reasons a subject of all perfections or on perfectionism is indeed possible. Well, there you go. There you go. That's sort of, you have to understand that this is in an age, a non-utilitarian age. But the argument itself is not sufficient to determine that God necessarily exists. Leibniz must also show that existence is itself a perfection, so that that a being having all perfections is en perfectissimum, that being said to exist. More exactly, Leibniz needs to show that that necessary existence belongs to the existence of God. And this he does in another short piece from the period, writing, quote, "Again, a necessary being is the same as the being whose existence, essence existence follows. For a necessary being is one which necessarily exists such that it is, that for if it not to exist would imply a contradiction, and so would conflict with the concept of the essence of its being." Wow, that's just so totally confused. Oh God. In other words, if it is the case that a necessary being is the same thing as a being whose existence follows from its essence, then the essence must in fact be one with its essential properties. Oh God. Leibniz continues in this short reflection, quote, "And so, existence belongs to its concepts or essence. From this we have a splendid theorem, which is the pinnacle of modal theory, by which one moves in a wonderful way from potentiality to act. If a necessary being is possible, it follows that it exists actually, or that such a being is actually found in the universe." The pinnacle of modal theory that Leibniz mentions here is none other than the one of the notorious axioms of the modal logic. And it's written here, in symbols I can't understand. They've got a diamond square, P goes to square P. In short, Leibniz's argument is the following. Okay. So, this is the entire thing. This is where Bertrand Russell really goes. Number one. This is the definition. God is a being having all perfections. Number two, a perfection is a simple or true absolute property. Existence is a perfection. If existence is part of the essence of a thing, then it is a necessary being. If it is possible for a necessary being to exist, then A, necessary being does exist. It is possible for a being to have all perfections. Therefore, it's necessary God exists. It's able to prove it. It's sort of a bit speechless, but what on earth does it mean? He's just proven the existence of God by his modality, but his modality has, monadism has generated from the existence of God. Okay. It should be noted that Leibniz's arguments bear a certain affinity with the ontological arguments of Gödel gives, insofar as it also seeks to demonstrate the possibility of being, having being all simple positive properties. For Gödel arguments, see the entry on ontological arguments. Wow. 7.1.2, the cosmological argument. So this is from Observing the Universe, I think. As we have seen, the principle of sufficient reason is one of the bedrock principles of all Leibniz's philosophy. In the monadology, Leibniz appeals to PSR, some principle of sufficient something or other, saying that even in the case of contingent truths, truths are in fact there must be sufficient reason why they are so and not otherwise. Monology, number chapter 36. But since this particular truth is in fact a contingent upon some other prior truth effect, the reason for the entire series of truth must be located outside the series. The ultimate reason is that we call God, which is interesting a bit about maths and the chicken, basically the ancient view of the chicken and egg, you know, if things cause everything. In the Theodicy, Leibniz fills, that's a book called Theodicy, Leibniz fills out this argument with a fascinating account of the nature of God. Insofar as the first cause of the entire series must, this is again, the first cause is like the ancient view of the prime mover, for Aristotle, you know, every motion has to have a cause, so that you have to have the initial cause, and that's God. Okay. First, insofar, the first cause of the entire series must have been able to survey all other possible worlds. It has understanding. Second, insofar as it was able to select one world among an infinity of possible worlds, it has will. Third, insofar it was able to bring about this world, it has power. Leibniz adds there is power relates to being, wisdom or understanding to truth, and will to good. Fourth, so far as the first cause relates to all possibilities, is understanding. Will and power are infinite. And a fifth, insofar as everything is connected together, there is no reason to suppose more than one God. Thus, Leibniz was able to demonstrate the uniqueness of God, his dominance, omnipotence, benevolence, from the twin assumptions of the contingency of the world on the principle of sufficient reason. Theodicy, chapter 7, and goes through. Naturally, if one were to deny the existence of possible worlds, in a sense conceived by Leibniz, or deny PSR, or say, admitting brute facts, one would hardly be moved to this kind of argument. So, PSR means that there's no such thing as an outright fact. It's a bit confusing here. So, essentially, he's got a sequence here. I should be able to write this out in an app for you. Leibniz's accounts of the nature of possible worlds is dealt with in a separate entry. Here, following the simple question, will be addressed. How can this world be the best of all possible worlds? After all, Voltaire brought out so clearly in Candide, it certainly seems that this world, in which one finds no short supply of natural and moral horrors, is far from perfect. Indeed, it's pretty lousy. Oh gosh, this is sad. Certainly, only a fool could believe that this is the best world possible, but Leibniz speaks on behalf of the fool with an argument that is essentially the following structure. Okay, so Leibniz is coming across as a bit of a fool. One, God is omnipotent and omniscience and benevolence and the free creator of the world definition. Things that could be otherwise, i.e. are other possible worlds. Premise, suppose this world is not the best of all possible worlds, i.e. the world could be better. Four, if this world is not the best of all possible worlds, then at least one of the following could be the case. God is not powerful enough to bring about a better world. God did not know how the world would develop after the creation. God did not wish this world to be the best. God did not create the world. There were no other possible worlds from which God could choose. But any one of these, or more of these, disjuncts of contradicts one and two. Therefore, the world is the best of all possible worlds. Oh, God. He's saying, God. In other words, Leibniz himself seems to argue that if one is to hold traditional theoristic conception of God and believe that one can meaningfully assert the world could not have been other than it is, then must hold that this world is the best possible. Naturally, his argument is simply the Christian retort to the Epicurean argument against theism. Now, that's Epicurus. I'll have to go back and read Epicurus. Epicurus is something very, very close to monadism. He has, Epicurean has these little free-wheeling agents which work in parallel, but in sympathy producing. I'm really glad I've read this Epicurus. But what are the criteria by which one can say the world is the best? It should be clear that Leibniz nowhere says that this argument implies that. Okay, we're coming back to the end of this, and I'll have to wrap up where I think this, everything has to be wonderful. Indeed, Leibniz is squarely in the tradition of all Christian apologists going back to Augustine, arguing that we cannot have knowledge of the whole of the world, and even a piece of the mosaic that is discoverable to us is ugly, while the whole may indeed have a great beauty. Still, Leibniz does offer at least two considerations relative to the determination of happiness and perfection of the world. He tells us in the Discourse of Metaphysics first that, quote, happiness of the mind is the principal aim of God, and second, that God has chosen the most perfect world, that is, the one which is at the same time the simplest in hypothesis and the richest in phenomena. So, the world of genocide and natural disaster better than a world of continuing with multifoliate rose, yes, because the former world is in which an infinity of minds perceive and reflect a diversity of phenomena caused by the modest number of simple laws. To a more difficult question, whether there is a better world with perhaps a little less genocide and natural disaster, Leibniz can only respond that, if so, God would have brought it into actuality. And this, of course, is to say there's really no better possible world. Okay, that's the conclusion of it. So that's Stanford one, and Stanford is very understandable. It's sort of gone into the actual Leibniz and his role in theology, because Leibniz is really important in the derivation of mathematics. So there's two major things, so that's the end of this one, there's two major things that Leibniz did, and we don't know how the structure's in. I sort of can get an idea, my brain's almost exploding with the amount of information in this, so he's a monadist and a Christian person who's actually got himself into a complete and utter knot on two fronts. One is that God must exist and this God can't have evil, or he's allowing the evil, but overall, this is allowing a greater beauty of it all. It would be insane, especially if someone decided to be evil next to him. He'd just always say, well, that's the best. Thanks for robbing me. Thanks for clubbing me. Oh, that's the best possible. Sort of this bizarre giving away things, but also this is the scholasticism themselves without experimental theory is there in terms of that an atom or the Leibnizian view of infinite complexity and infinite information and infinite sets. So this is really, he's awaiting the arrival of set theory, but the important things here is that he actually derived calculus. Now, this is a major thing, differential equations. The entire theory of quantum mechanics results on his primary discovery. Like, quantum mechanics is not possible without calculus or differential equations. The Schrodinger equation is a differential equation. It's not possible without his first step and going forward. Also, his belief in maths is really interesting. His belief of maths that one is God and naught is not God, and so we should be able to create an entire system of noughts and ones. It's sort of, how did that come across? But it is really important that he's the father of binary equilibrium of the digital age. So this again didn't come through here, and so it's almost in terms of that, like, this is not the best of all possible worlds, this is not the best of all possible readings. It is one particular reading which does one particular thing very well, but it doesn't necessarily deal with Leibniz in the role of different fields in terms of computer science and in physics, the background of physics. It is interesting that he uses mathematical arguments, set theory arguments. He uses references to fundamental elements like gold to get through. So it is a very interesting thing to get through. I suppose what really strikes me is the best of all possible worlds is, in actual fact, if you look at Lagrangians and you look at space and you get the integral, that it's that a system will follow the minimized integral, Lagrangian integral. So in an essence, there is some sort of truth in there. I just can't quite get what it is, but it is interesting that mathematics has actually borrowed some of the ideas of this. The best possible world is your I've forgotten what it is. It's the action. Your action through different coordinate spaces. It's very interesting, and there's sort of no argument of that. Your coordinate system of perception, your ability to see different angles, perceptions, and it's also that he's interesting. He's got a prestige of existing arguments. So Augustine is also a sort of fantastic person to look at. Thanks a lot for listening, and if I could say, I'll put up the the apps for it, and I won't actually put a quiz with this, a quiz and stuff like that, but I'll start to actually crank open, I'll just pop the cork on the computer software, which automatically starts to put quizzes and apps. Look, I might actually start to do it for this one. I'll have a quiz and an app on this one. A quiz and a word scramble on it. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.